Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Mostly Horror early and ad-free on Amazon Music.
Download the app today.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to Mostly Horror Movie Night.
Mostly.
I'm Steve.
And I am Sean.
And Sean just refused to baby bird me the rest of his Coca-Cola. You heard it here first. It's a sad day.
And you know what's funny?
I almost said our address out loud.
Don't do that. Do not do that. Don't do that.
I almost said it's a sad day, Adam. It's our address.
It's funny because I think I said no to you without even hearing what you said, if I'm being honest with you. If you want me to baby bird you Coke, I'll do it.
No, that's not what I said. It'd be fine. Coward. That's what I said. Coward. Yeah, sorry. I got another one. It's fine. This is, after a couple weeks of struggling to figure out what episode it was, this is episode 73.
Yep.
That's a damn fact. Dude, I looked it up.
I know. Didn't we I say... looked up. Did we actually get it wrong last week, or did we get it right?
So
we thought we got it wrong.
So we got it wrong. We thought we got it right, and I corrected you. For some reason, Spotify and the powers that be were putting, after episode 69, of our episodes were like ahead. So like episode 70 was actually saying 71. They like skipped 70 for some reason. I don't know why, but. Anyway, things are adjusted now. This is episode 73. We're joined by Dom and Adam from Eye of the Duck. It's a very, very, very cool podcast that you guys should check out, especially if you're fans of film. They're both cinephiles, if you will. Yeah. Both fans of film, filmmakers themselves, know what they're talking about, have very well-researched episodes where they talk about film franchises and series and that sort of thing.
My cat is just screaming at you.
Yeah, I can hear Kara. Kara, I don't care. She's right outside your door, too. It's fine.
Is she? How is it that I hear her through this?
You hear it louder through. It's fine. It's ambiance to the episode.
Yeah.
But so before we get to the interview conversation with Dom and Adam, we both saw a movie this week.
Yep.
That came out. It's a film called Barbarian. And so if you're listening to this episode, you're probably listening to it about a week and a half to 2 weeks after it's been out in theaters. This weekend, it actually did $10 million in theaters, which is pretty good for not an independent 20th century films, but for a original horror film premise by a first-time director... to make $10 million, number one in the box office, even though it's not, you know, a crazy, crazy box office currently, but Barbarian, we both saw it. We saw it at different times. So I want to really quick talk about how we saw it. So how did you see this movie?
Welp. So we had, so you know, we had our friend Holly visiting us in New York City, and so we, you know, me, Chelsea, Kaylee, and Holly all went and caught a late night viewing of Barbarian, which was fun. You know, it was fun to meet up with them and go see a movie. That's kind of my. It's really interesting to move to New York City and to bring so many friends. Like, we're in a really interesting situation. I think we've talked about it before, but to bring friends from back home. I feel like most of the time when people move out of their home state, especially to some place like New York City, it's kind of something you're doing on your own. But this was a nostalgic sort of feel for me because this is the people that I used to go see movies with when I was 15, 16, 17 years old.
Right.
So that was great.
Were there a lot of people in the theater?
No, dude, we had like a damn near empty theater. We saw a 10:15 show at the AMC by us, which we're not going to say where that is. But I will say it's not one of the biggest AMCs. I also want to complain a little bit about this AMC. It's the floor is way too flat here. It is not at enough of an angle. I am 5'2", so if anyone sits in front of me that's, you know, normal person height, they're at least somewhat in the way of the screen. So it's definitely not my favorite AMC to go to.
Yeah, some of them in the city, some of them in the city are like that. Like, even I love the Lincoln Center one, especially for the IMAX itself, but a lot of their theaters are flat as well, and it's just one of those. It's the same with, like, some of the older theaters in Michigan, like the Michigan and the State Theater, well, the Michigan one in particular is, like, a flat one. Yeah. I don't know. My burp knocked my my thoughts out of my brain as I was speaking. I saw it last night. I saw it at 9:30. I saw it alone. I walked in the rain to go watch this movie. There were three or four more people with me in the theater. At, you know, again, a 9:30 showing ends up being like a 10 o'clock showing after all the trailers.
It was burp in this episode.
This is a rough episode. Do we want to do the thing, how do you think I felt, how do I think you felt? I honestly just want to know what you felt about it, to be honest.
I didn't love it. I didn't love it. Alright, so I want to say, I didn't hate it either. I want to stress that. There's definitely things I liked about it. I liked the way that it started, the feel. It felt like, it's interesting, because I feel
Let's also not spoil here, if we can.
No.
You know, this should be a movie that you guys go check out.
Absolutely. I want to stress, do not take me saying that I didn't love it as a reason not to go see it. I think you absolutely should go see it. It is... Frankly, I think it's one of those horror movies that might not have just been made for me. Like, it just wasn't made for me specifically. There are moments that I absolutely love. I really dig the beginning of it and sort of, like, laying out the situation and the meeting
first,
our characters.
The first whole act, sure.
I love Bill Skarsgård. He is such a talent. But without trying to spoil it, what I'll say is that there are tonal changes throughout the movie. There are multiple tonal changes throughout the whole movie. And I will say that I don't think it served them in a few different ways. I think that the movie that you ended up getting... it's almost kind of like how I feel with X, where I feel like the movie that I thought I was going to get... I would say this is more so than X, is different than what I got. Like, the trailer feels a certain way, and the rest of the movie... went in a different direction, but not even a direction that I felt was super new. It was stuff. It was just kind of a mood. And I don't know how to explain it, but that I've seen before and things that I don't love about movies, like, as it went on. So what the movie ended up kind of really being about was just not my favorite thing. It, in a way, it reminded me of... God damn it! We have to talk about it when we can actually do spoilers. But... is it too much to say that in certain ways it reminded me of Don't Breathe?
No, I've seen that be said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even down to the fact that it happens in the Metro Detroit area.
Yeah.
But
in the Detroit area.
Yeah. I think that everyone that was in the movie did a great job. I want to stress that. I think the cast did an amazing job. Every single person involved. And yeah, I don't know. It kind of just got a little weird for me. Oh, the mood thing. The other thing I wanted to say was it felt like it built up tension, and it did it really well at this nice, slow, but like nice pace. And then it would finally start to flicker and then change and kill it for me. And that's not always a bad thing, but for me, it just didn't work this time. So,
yeah
not my favorite. Happy to have seen it. Yeah. But.
So, there were times in this film. There was a time in this film where I thought this was going to be one of my favorites of the year. Like, probably right around the time that you're talking about. There's a big shift in the film, you know, I guess that's kind of a spoiler if you're looking for it, but I, you know, the
you'll see it. It hits you right in the face.
Yeah. At the end of the first act, it hits you right in the face. At the end of the first act, you know, there's a shift, and I was like, fuck yeah, dude. I was like, fuck yeah. But unfortunately, the film doesn't do anything with it. Or what the film does with the rest of its runtime is not really worthy of anything. It makes a lot of really weird decisions. It makes a lot of really strange technical decisions too. And at the end of the day, you're left with this hodgepodge of ideas and things that is kind of like, okay. I agree that, like I said, the beginning was so good. I do think the like acting was really weird, and I don't know if that's like to make you, you know, nervous of Bill Skarsgård or like what it is, and we can go more into depth maybe on another episode, like if we talk with someone from the film. But I love Justin Long. I love Justin Long and everything that he is. Gunslinger till I die.
Yeah, dude. We love Justin Long.
He's amazing. But yeah, I just thought, you know, there's so many things that they could have talked about with, you know, like the blight in Detroit or police or, you know, just a number of things that they could have made comments on even about horror, like with this horror film, and they didn't. And so I just felt like, meh. I did laugh a lot. There was a lot of shit in this movie that made me laugh. I mean, it's the writer-director is Zach Krieger, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that, but one of the five members of the Whitest Kids You Know, very funny dude. And yeah, it was just weird. And I compare it to Malignant. I think that Malignant, where this film feels like a hodgepodge of things and ideas, Malignant, you know, James Wan knows how to make one concise film and idea and movie, and Malignant very much is that. But in the way that I enjoyed the absolute nonsense that Malignant is, I enjoyed, you know, Barbarian in the same way. Also, shout out to Light Iron, who did Barbarian, Sam Daly, the colorist, killed it. The color's really good.
Right. It's so I think the word hodgepodge is a really good word to have chosen because
it's the word of the day.
It just felt like a lot of different good ideas, but that were just kind of fused together. Maybe they got really excited writing and just didn't want to kick anything out. But again, it's at the same time, like, I think it was fun. And I also think that there's people that are going to be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I loved this. I love the roller coaster of it. That's where I say,
I think we're in the minority here, specifically from horror fans. It seems like this is another like home run for a lot of people.
Sure. I was about to say I had heard nothing but great things going to see it, and I don't even want to say it's not even that I have bad or that I look at it and I go that was bad. It's just I just don't feel that it was what was for me. It's more like the movie's just filled with moments or twists or turns that just kind of throws me off. It also felt like it almost used twist just to do them, or like the movie was kind of like focused on that aspect. Like I think that what they did marketing wise was really genius to set a certain I don't want to give anything away, but But yeah, so I'll leave it there. Definitely go see it. I think it's absolutely worth a watch. I might even add it to the collection, and I can assure you that I'll see it again.
Yeah, I think I would definitely add it to the collection just because I do think it has a rewatch value. I hope everyone that's listening is enjoying us tiptoeing around saying anything about this movie.
Yeah.
specifically. That's been very fun. My feet are tired from tap dancing around this. So that Barbarian wasn't for you, but things that are for you, Eye of the Duck podcast. We're joined by Adam and Dom. Mm-hmm. Before we get to their conversation, Sean, any final thoughts about it?
They are so just informed and aware, and you can tell that they really are movie buffs, and they do their research. This is I'm not just talking about our interview specifically with them here, but their show as well, which I cannot recommend enough.
Yeah.
These guys know what the hell they're talking about. They say it more elegantly than I do sometimes. I say that in the episode, but it was a blast to talk to them, and they're definitely the type of people that I would like to just hit them with movie questions all day, and I feel like we could talk to them for hours.
Absolutely. I feel like when you listen to a film podcast, you have two choices. You can listen to two guys who just want to talk about random shit and mm-hmm. may not know how to pronounce people's names, like mostly horror, or you can listen to a phenomenal, thoroughly researched breakdown of a movie franchise. And that's where Eye of the Duck comes in. So
I hope, go ahead. Well, I would say this. I would say that they are a wonderful, small but elegant orchestral piece. And we're jazz, baby.
We're jazz. Yeah. I was going to say something like, they're Apple and we're Zune. Yeah. Something to that effect. I don't know. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoy our conversation with Adam and Dom from Eye of the Duck. We'll catch you on the other side.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a house. It's your home, the place that's filled with memories. The early days of figuring it out to the later years of still figuring it out. For the place you've put down roots, trust Amica Home Insurance. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
All right, we are joined today by Dominic Nero and Adam Volarich. Dom and Adam are the co-hosts of Eye of the Duck, a seasonal podcast about movies and the scenes that make them special. Guys, thanks for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for bringing us in.
Absolutely. Oh, I want to say off the bat, it's really fun when we record with other podcasters because it makes us either feel inferior or superior or kind of like gives us a gauge. You guys got like professional ass setups. You know, you sound crisp as a coin, and I am sitting here on my couch holding a kindergartner's Amazon microphone.
You look a lot more comfortable than we do.
I'm very comfortable. That's definitely, you know, I won't argue with that. But
I mean, I broke the ice right off the bat by neither my microphone nor my headphones were working when we first got
which
on
is,
the call.
Which is a classic thing for
classic Dom. It's sort of a recurring bit. So
we've said this many times, and I don't have the visual prop for this, but when we we were talking, we interviewed Lemony Snicket not too long ago, and my microphone like swings off of the wall in my normal setup, and it was like swung to the wall. So the whole time, luckily we also record back up on Zoom, but it was just like this distant Steve voice in the background that was amazing. So anyways, we all know how podcasting goes. Thank you guys again for coming on. You know, we've wanted to chat for a while. Ash and Elena talked about you guys when I don't remember if it was while we were recording with them or after we had recorded, but they're like, you guys got to check them out, because I know they were on your Misery episode. Mm-hmm. So we listened to your guys' podcast, really 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 enjoy it. Before we talk about that though, I want to get into who you guys are, because anyone can listen to a podcast, but I want to know about Dom and Adam. So first thing off the bat, Dom, yes, on Twitter, you won a Webby.
I did.
What does that mean? What did you win it for? What is a Webby? I need an answer.
I have to cut you off before you even start and just say that you've just made Dom's whole night.
Yes.
Hell yeah. Oh, hell
you
yeah.
You want to speak about my Webby? I mean, when I got nominated for my Webby, I threatened to Adam that if I win, I'm gonna always introduce myself as Webby Award winning video editor.
I should have done that. Yes. You should have been like, by the way, when I come on podcast, you have to introduce me as this name.
Yes, I mean, it's loosely related to horror, actually. During the horror of, you know, the height of the pandemic, I was searching for a project to kind of keep me active, keep my brain kind of working. Mm-hmm. And I landed on trying to make a new episode of Seinfeld.
That was, hell yeah.
That was the goal. So like, not just, you know, scripting it or, you know, imagining it, but actually finding modern day footage of the Seinfeld cast and cutting together an episode of, like, what if there was a prestige TV, like, reboot of Seinfeld? The added flair, the added horror angle being, what if it was, like, a reboot in the way of Twin Peaks Season 3? So,
okay.
So it's called Seinfeld The Return, and it's kind of this, like, you know, hellish crossover of, like, Lynchian style with all the modern-day Seinfeld actors. And I committed way too many hours of my life to making it, but I won a Webby.
That's amazing.
I won for best mashup or supercut, I think.
And I will say it is well deserved. For all the shit I give Dom for having won said Webby, he very much earned it.
Thank you, Adam.
I'm curious. So you said you got footage. Is it footage from old episodes, or is it footage from, like, Seinfeld now or recently? Like, what is the...
Well, it's, you know, all four of the cast members plus, like, some of the peripheral cast members,
yeah,
in, like, modern-day productions that are, like, familiar enough that you can tell that it's them, like, from the past, like, 10 years, but still, like, kind of esoteric choices that you wouldn't be like, oh, that's just, like, Julia Louis-Dreyfus from Veep. So it's, yes, like all of these like strange things that I found them in, that I started just kind of like compiling them. I mean, it took a really long time, as you can imagine. And I kind of landed on this idea of, I don't know if you've seen the Criminal Minds episode with Jason Alexander. He has
Sean probably has.
Yeah. Refresh me.
He has long gray hair. And he's, like, evil. He's the bad guy.
And he throws the papers. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
So once I found that, I was able to kind of start, like, etching out a story around, like, what if there was an evil George? That, like, the good George is trapped and the evil George is lurking. Also, Jerry Seinfeld, not even in it at all. Jerry is dead. That's how it starts.
Amazing.
Oh, that's so... Did you take the like little theme song and put a dark spin on that at all?
I have to watch this.
It's imperative.
Head on over to YouTube, search Seinfeld The Return. It should come right up.
Absolutely. This will be the headline of this episode. This will be the link to this episode. Unfortunately, I, the duck, will be second. The Seinfeld The Return comes first. That's amazing. I had no idea about the Webby or about the premise of the Seinfeld Return. So I'm so glad to have learned this. Well, now that we have a Dom fun fact, Adam, I saw that you are, at least based on your website, it says that you're a professor at Rutgers. Is that correct?
I think legally I'm known as what is called a part-time lecturer. I teach at the Mason Gross School of the Arts in the BFA filmmaking program, and I teach a workshop, an intro to film production workshop. So it's how to use cameras, how to use audio equipment, how to edit, all the sort of basic entry-level stuff.
Since it's entry-level, and since I went to film school when I was 18, I'm curious, you know, how out of the element are kids now, or like, you know, first-year college students, like, are you seeing any growth in them? Is it just like crazy? They don't understand what they're getting into. Like, what is the level of depth?
It depends, really. Because it is an arts program. Like, it's an arts school. It's a fine arts degree. So you have to have a portfolio, and you have to have some degree of training before you can, you know, before you can apply. That being said, there are some students who come in and they're like whiz kids. They've been doing it for years, and they've really got a lot of self-training, or they've perhaps gone to an arts high school. And there are some other students who clearly display like an aptitude and a high degree of interest, but haven't yet had the opportunity to really like dig into the craft. And that's what I'm there for.
Do you ever just like break their souls at all? Like, do you ever just like, you're like, it is so difficult, or like, just ever just, you know, shit on their dreams?
Adam's soul is broken. That's,
yeah, my soul's shattered to pieces. At no point do I, you know, I have friends who sort of said like, oh, you should do the thing where you like look to your left, look to your right, like one of these people won't be here. Like, I don't do any of that shit. That's fucked up.
Right.
I like to think of myself as their biggest cheerleader, but I'm very realistic and truthful with them. And I sort of say to them like early on in the semester, like as long as there is time left in the class and it leads to a discussion that is appropriate for class, you can ask me anything you want about filmmaking and the film industry, and I will answer honestly. And so that leads to a lot of conversations that where I can like sort of see the light starting to leave their eyes, and I can pull them back in and be like, no, but we're here because we love this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but, wow. But yeah, no, I don't beat around the bush, and I try to sort of frame all my lessons through the lens of like, here is a useful skill for making your films while you are a student here, but also a skill you can monetize so you don't starve to death.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's teaching like creative topics and stuff must be so complicated. I think about my time at art school and how there were just at a certain point, I think in a person's college career, you have to kind of let them know whether or not this is right for them if they're really off the path. It almost seems like a disservice, you know, to keep certain people on. And I just saw my school take advantage of a lot of people. So it's kind of hard to like, you obviously don't want to shoot down people's dreams or anything, and you don't want to tell people they're not any good. But have you ever come across anything like that? I guess you're kind of more in the intro stuff, so it might be a bit early to tell.
Yeah, because I teach first year students, I don't think I've ever like found myself in a situation where I'm like, quit while you're behind, you know. They've been here for like, you know, 3 months, so there's no I would say I've never found myself in that situation. I think because filmmaking specifically, like unlike like other areas of the arts, like filmmaking is equal parts arts and science, where
fair.
I think that you can actually be a completely uncreative person and like not have a single interesting idea in your head and probably still carve out a living using some of the skills you'll learn at film school.
Absolutely.
I've met colorists that can talk about color for days, and I'm like, I wouldn't ask your recommendation on a scene, but like,
sure. Right.
I want to stress what I was saying. I was not trying to be mean-spirited at all. I just think about
I didn't think that.
Right. For any listeners that might have thought that, I think of my very, very expensive art school and, you know, an animation program where you could have at least, faculty could have at least pointed people in different directions in the animation industry instead of having people who are not illustrators or drawers drawing way late into the game and not benefiting from the school is all. I just think about art school a lot. So
I mean, I think a lot of private institutions are incredibly predatory, and essentially they'll if as long as you can, you know, keep paying the insane tuition fees over the 4 years or whatever it is, they're happy to take your money.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, but enough tangenting. Let's talk about
anti-college talk.
Yeah,
because
I could
college.
Go on forever.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm very anti-college on this podcast. So
yeah, I'm in a lot of debt. Let's talk about Eye of the Duck, kind of the initial conceptions of your guys's podcast. How did you guys you know come together and decide to do this, and what explain the concept of Eye of the Duck to people and what that means and how you guys use it?
Well, so Adam and I went to college together, actually, speaking of college, and we've just been buds for a long time working on films together. We've made a ton of movies and documentaries, and we had a production team together for a long time. And throughout all of that, Adam has been saying, "Dom, we should really have a film podcast." And I was saying, like, I don't know, there's too many of them already. What are we going to talk about? Like, what... I feel like, Adam, you were like pitching me ideas for a long time, and I was
at a certain point, I sent you a document, and I was like, "Here are 10 pitches for shows that we could host together. Pick one of them."
Yes,
and you were like, "No."
And I'm selfish. I'm narcissistic, and I was riding my bike around Prospect Park one night, and I love this idea. I'm not going to claim that I came up with the idea. I mean, Adam and I kind of collaborated around this idea that David Lynch brought to fans of cinema, this idea of an Eye of the Duck scene. It's something he talks about. It's something I've thought about for a long time. And when you and I talk about it, Adam, it was all of a sudden, it was like, oh yes, this can be a podcast. Like this feels like it's in our wheelhouse. And I don't know, Adam, you want to explain like the Eye of the Duck, the theory, the film theory of it?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the idea of an Eye of the Duck, you know, David Lynch, we sort of paraphrase Lynch when we intro our show, but you know, Lynch has this philosophy about ducks, where he says you can look at its bill, you can look at its feet, you can look at its feathers, but if you really want to understand a duck, you have to look at its eye. And then if you, you know, keep watching the clips of him, he says all sorts of stuff like, you know, the eye is the slowest part of the duck and the feet are the fastest part. And like, you know, the eye is always in the right place. And he says all this very, you know, David Lynchy stuff. Yeah. But the central premise that he is pitching and that we've taken and built a show around is that every film has one scene that sort of encapsulates everything that the film is and that the film is built around. And so each week we talk about a film, we talk about sort of the context in which it's made, and then we each sort of offer up what are, you know, what we think the Eye of the Duck scene is.
Yeah. I mean, for context for your listeners, if you're a fan of Lynch, and in that same interview, they ask him, well, would the Eye of the Duck scene in Blue Velvet be the In Dreams moment? And he says, yes, that's it. That's the Eye of the Duck scene. But the example Adam and I always go to, and we built a whole mini series around this, was the chestburster in Alien. It's such a clear, like, there it is. There, it's popped out of the chest. The whole movie kind of just comes out of that chest in that moment, and it kind of, you know, encapsulates the whole goal of the film, I think.
Absolutely. Sort of the heart of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
The cinematic
heart. The
heart,
the eye, Sean.
Yeah, well, yes.
Not listening to
yes,
Adam,
no, you're right. You're absolutely right.
I'll
just see myself out.
I'm curious, like, when you... I always wonder about this with people that are either film critics or talk about film a lot, like, or have gone to film school. When you guys are watching films, do you now, especially with this podcast, watch them with a different angle, like, even if you're not going to be talking about them?
Without a doubt. I mean, like, I had already like ruined my brain by like learning how films get made and trying to
absolutely
make them, because then it becomes that thing of like you're watching a movie and you're like, oh, they broke the 180 and they didn't even do it for a good reason, this is shit now, you know, like that's happening left and right, or it's like the light's coming from the wrong direction. Why do the shadows look like that? You know, it's like that stuff's always been like haunting me ever since we started, you know, making films. And now they've got this added layer of like, I'm watching a film and I can't find an Eye of the Duck scene. And it's like, well, the movie's obviously shit, you know?
Well, we've kind of like encountered that. Like we talked about the infamous Van Helsing movie, starring Hugh Jackman, of course. And
yes, classic.
A movie that I love, but watching it this time through the lens of the podcast, Adam disagrees with me, but I could not find a scene. And it was like kind of this epiphany of like, oh, if a movie is bad enough, it has no central theme. It has no central message or goal. It's just like a hodgepodge of madness. That's what I thought that movie was. And I kind of put my foot down and said, there is no Eye of the Duck scene.
But the beauty...
It was an existential crisis for me.
It was. And you should listen to that episode because Dom does completely lose it. But the beauty of, I think, the sort of Eye of the Duck philosophy is that even if the film has no central unifying theme, there is usually some kind of central unifying element, whether it's in the filmmaking itself or maybe it's within like a certain actor's like performance. Like there's usually something to find that you can look at and be like, this is the film's reason for existing.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I can point to a reason for Van Helsing existing. I do love that movie.
It's been so long. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I just like, I'm thinking, is it the three female vampire fight scene? Is it the carriage chase scene?
Adam, you got to tell them what it is.
Yeah, I haven't listened to the Van Helsing episode. That's one I haven't caught.
Your blessed scene.
Yeah, I guess I'll just spoil it. But the scene that I came up with was the very end of the film where Hugh Jackman and the Friar, whatever his name is, they're
Friar Greg or something, right?
Yeah, something like that.
It's like Friar Doug.
they're like holding a funeral for. Is it Kate Beckinsale? Who's in that movie?
It's
her. Right?
They're holding a funeral for Kate Beckinsale, and then he looks up in the clouds, and Kate Beckinsale superimposed in the clouds and like looks down on him smiling, and then like she looks up and like her dead brother and dead father are up there as well, and it's like this completely ridiculous moment. And you sort of I sort of look at that scene and I'm just like, yeah, this is the movie. Like this is the exact sort of philosophy the movie has towards everything is as maximalist as possible, kind of as, you know, absurd as possible, and like as sincere as possible. Like the movie doesn't have an insincere bone in its body, and this is maximal sincerity.
Wow. I love that we're talking about Van Helsing on this podcast. Yeah. I own it. It's in my collection over there, and I haven't watched it in far too long. So.
I'm begging you guys to rewatch it.
It's worth popping on.
It's a trip, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, it's so fun. I'll watch any Hugh Jackman movie, but specifically Van Helsing. It's amazing. So, like, obviously you guys have this way that you're viewing films now. When you... I'm wondering how you approach the series that you do. So, like, you guys did... all the Jurassic Park, Jurassic World movies. As of today, September 12th, this episode will come out a little while after, but you just put out Mission Impossible Fallout, right?
Yes.
Is the last one. So you just did the Mission Impossible series. Like, how are you guys going about choosing which series you want to do? And then also, you know, how are you guys breaking down the, I'll call it research for these episodes?
Well, it all comes back to Alien, I think. We started the podcast kind of like, let's just do movies that we love or movies that our guests like really care about and want to talk about and go from there. But as we were going through that, I think, I don't know, Adam, we started to realize like it would be cool to do a mini series, right?
Yeah, I think something about my friendship with Dom is that every now and then he'll text or call me with like an idea, and the idea will usually be like a phrase or something. And I think the best sort of encapsulation of this is if you know the band Queen, the way that Freddie Mercury got the band to be named Queen is that while they were out one day, he spray painted the word Queen on all of the cases for their instruments and all over their practice space, and lo and behold, the band is now called Queen. And similarly, when we had a production company, Dom was just like, I don't know, man, I'm pretty sure this is the name of the production company. And so one day Dom texted me Xenomorph Summer, and I was like, oh well, fuck, that's it, isn't it?
Yes, Xenomorph Summer, man. It just felt right for the series, and
yes.
we didn't really know how right it was until like,
no, we didn't.
Now, like, I don't know how many miniseries later, we're still like trying to get that
just
high.
Chasing that high.
Yeah. because that's
just like,
series,
wow, can we just do it again? Like,
I think we will.
You never
eventually
forget your first Xenomorph summer. That's absolutely true. Yeah,
there is something so unique about that series that, like, I mean, first of all the films in the series, in my opinion, are like very high quality. And they're all made by different directors, and all of them have such a unique take on the series. And there are few series. I mean, as we have found, like, there are so few.
Yeah, it's
series
like accidentally
like
the perfect series for our show to cover.
Right, because like we don't do directors, we don't really do actors, we don't, like, you know. And genres are an interesting thing to cover, but like, I feel like for this Eye of the Duck idea, it's really compelling, I think, to try to narrow down an entire like work into one idea. So when you do a franchise like Alien, you at the end of it, you can be like, well, what is the scene that kind of defines this whole series? What are they trying to set out to say?
Sure.
You know, if you looked at the franchise holistically, which we try to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that one again. Oh, sorry.
No, go for it.
I'll just say the other thing that makes that franchise so special in particular. Although I'm gonna swap out the word franchise for series because I'm feeling like icky just saying franchise over and over again. But
we'll get to that. Don't worry.
Yeah. One of the reasons why that series is so another reason why it's so cool to cover is like it spreads over like almost like 40 years of film industry. So there's so much to talk about, and just like the way that films have been made for, you know, decade after decade after decade, and like the way the industry has changed in between installments. And then like you look at something like Alien 3 and like you learn about how that film got made and you're like, this was a huge budget blockbuster. Like, you would never see a film like this today. And it's got this element where you just like at the end of every film, you're like, damn, what a picture, and they don't make him like they used to. And it's just this, I think that's another element that we tend to really gravitate towards.
Sure.
Yeah,
I do have to ask, so we're fans of Alien 3 then?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Oh, so, I just
so
don't
Sean,
love that one.
Sean doesn't.
Oh,
love it.
No, I'm sorry. I thought you were presenting that as like, of course we are.
Yeah, Sean doesn't love Alien 3. I actually have never seen it, which is wild because I love the Alien series. I've seen every other film, and David Fincher is my favorite director. I've seen every other film by Fincher.
What are you waiting for?
You gotta watch
it. Don't know. I really don't know why. I think it's just been like scaring me to touch it because I've heard things. I know it's his first feature. But yeah, it's just one of those things where I just don't know how I feel about approaching it. I see Fincher a specific way. I feel like even watching Mank made me be like, oh, I don't know, and then go on to his next stuff.
It's going to be like a Christmas morning for you or something. I don't know if you're Christian, but like, you're going to give yourself that film. It's so exciting that you have that just waiting for you.
And if it makes you feel better, you have nothing to lose, because if you love it, then you get to tell yourself, man, Fincher has always been good. And if you hate it, you can say, well, he walked away from it. It's not really his film anyway.
It's true. It's a win-win.
That's so true.
Director's cut, though. You got to watch the director's cut.
Or they just call it the assembly cut. It's like it's the editor came back after the fact and was like, this is mostly what Fincher was trying to do.
Because I didn't this time around, and I was like, yeah, I'm a little colder on this than I was before.
Okay. Maybe I need to make sure that that's the version that I see. And
maybe take a look.
I love 1 and 2 so much. I even love Resurrection, and a lot of people are weird. Yeah, see, I'm not like a stickler.
We're pro-Resurrection.
Yes.
Okay, see, I want to stress, I'm not like a, you know, like strict about the series or anything. I'm not that person. Mm-hmm. I just, something about 3 just doesn't hit for me. It frustrates me with some of the, I don't want to spoil things for Steve, but some of the things that they undo from 2 kind of, and some of the visuals are less, in my opinion. But
I mean, it's a very difficult movie. You have to accept Adam.
For sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But you're a difficult man. It works for you.
That's fair.
Now we know Christmas morning, Sean will pop in the Blu-ray, the assembly cut, and we'll watch it.
Please.
That's the plan.
Yeah, joy to the world. Let's go.
So we got I was going to say, take it away, Sean.
Well, yeah, I was just about to say, so I jumped into your guys' show recently, within the past like month and a half or so, and jumped right into your Jurassic Park, your Jurassic Park one. I didn't go through the full franchise. I wanted to start with first ones, but you talk about so many things in Jurassic Park, and I kind of wanted to talk with you guys a bit about your thoughts on CGI today, because a big, you know, talking point in your episode there is how Jurassic Park kind of really brought CGI to like the mainstream and changed the industry. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are on movies today and how CGI is done now versus then, and the impact, and how much, I don't want to put thoughts out there until I hear from you, but yeah, we'll start there and then I'll say other things.
Yeah. What do you think, Adam? How do we tackle this?
Yeah, I'll
it's a broad question.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken so much about it together.
Yeah, I think a good way to preface it is by saying that, like, I think there are exceptionally talented CG artists working, like, across the board, who I think are, it seems increasingly, as one company sort of consolidates its power over the entire industry, they seem to be not given the time or money to work to their best of their abilities, and including, you know, situations where, like, you know, producers and directors don't understand the concept of, like, previs or temporary, you know, visual, and will sort of request full renders of things, which then, you know, cuts out a lot of the budget and cuts a lot of the time and schedule. And so oftentimes when you're watching a finished product, you're seeing sort of, like, you know, not the team's best work on display. So I think it's important to sort of, like, acknowledge that, and acknowledge that, like, there are the gears of industry behind that, and, like, why you are not getting the opportunity to see, why they're not getting the opportunity to do their best work, and you're not getting the opportunity to see their best work. That being said, like, I also think there's been, like, leaps and bounds in visual effects that are, like, really, really stunning, and, like, sometimes you watch something and you're just like, wow, I, like, can't believe that we're here. Like, I can't believe we've managed to, like, succeed in that way. And it's really exciting to see what can be done when the money is spent the right way, and the people are offered the right working conditions.
Yeah. The other thing we always point out is that, like, whenever people have this conversation, it seems like people always miss the fact that, like, so much of what we see in movies today is digital. Like, you know, people complain, like, I hate CGI. I mean, that's a really hard generalized statement to make, because, like, 100%. You watch, like, any movie, like, fucking, like, The Wolf of Wall Street is, like, 80% CGI, right? Like, they revealed, like, all of it was on a green screen, and we didn't even know. So it's another good thing that I think that needs to be part of that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talk about this a fair amount. I worked in post-production for about a year once I moved to New York, and one thing that was really interesting to me was seeing all of the VFX that's in films and TV, and, you know, I think it just premiered, I don't know if I should say this, a movie by a very popular director who makes a franchise about a black woman named Madea. He has a new movie out, and it's heavy VFX, heavy CGI, and it's things that you would never realize. Gossip Girl, very, very, very heavy CGI, the new series.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. I saw a thing not too long ago, like, for one of the episodes of Mindhunter, the TV show, I'm going to talk about Fincher again, he literally replaced, like, something on a sidewalk that you would never notice on the ground,
because
it was like, this era of Missouri wouldn't have had, like, the yellow caution area.
He's always doing stuff like that.
Yeah. It's amazing, but also, you know,
and he does things, you don't notice anything, and he does things where, like, he's got, like, you know, six takes of a certain, you know, like, scene, and he's cropping out corners of each take and, like, fusing them together, and then using VFX to change the shape of people's mouths to make sure that the speed of everyone's dialogue matches up in the wide shot. You know, like, he really, like, he uses the tools at his disposal just however the hell he wants to. But also, he's Fincher, so he has, like, you know, a blank check whenever he wants to do anything.
Yeah, that's fair. That was, but, like, I felt kind of put off when, you know, you have that sort of stuff happening. And then I think with the recent, like, Thor movie, I'm a big Taika fan, but I think there was, like, a clip of him kind of shitting on some of the VFX in the film. He was like, oh, did I approve that? And like, there was a big uproar. Like, that's kind of ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, that was a really gross clip. And I think it shows more of like how the industry doesn't like respect the time and the effort and the work of digital artists. But I mean, all of this being said, Adam, I don't think we both finished our thought that like, at least from my point of view, I am, of course, as you could expect, like, not completely like fuck CGI, but like, yes, whenever you see like the real tangible stuff on screen, it's such a fucking treat. And it, yeah, like when it's done right, and you know, Adam can speak at length about all of the artists that, you know, Adam does a lot of the research section in our show. And mm-hmm. I mean, in your research and in the production history stuff we've done together, we found so many artists from that era that just, it feels like such a lost art, and it feels like just a thing from film history that I really hope doesn't completely disappear, even though it seems inevitable, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I'll just echo what you were saying that like, yeah, the real tangible thing, like there's nothing better, you know, like if I can get the sense that you're using like models and miniatures and like stop motion and,
yes,
and practical makeup and real goop and goo, like I'm probably going to have more fun, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it does seem like it's going to become a lost art, because it's like, you would think that given the sort of like new methods of, you know, manufacturing and like 3D printing and like advancements in all forms of industry, like you'd think that we'd be getting better and better and better practical stuff, and instead we are getting less and less practical stuff and more, well, we could probably do that on a laptop, so let's do it on a laptop.
Yeah. It's well, first off, I think you both had perfect answers. yeah, it's frustrating when people just seem to condemn CGI in general. Because clearly it's just got to be the perfect mix. I think that in an ideal world, every project would make decisions purely based on what is best for the project, you know, what's best for the art. So like, using a practical effect when that's what's best, and using, you know, even if it's a full CGI creature, which is what people tend to think of most of the time when they're having this argument, at least it's a big part of it, in the conversations I've heard, just picking the right thing for the right time and not making decisions because of money. And you said it a lot more elegant than me, because I would be just like, the fucking studios are just assholes and they don't give the artists the time. And you know, so
I mean, it's not just they're not giving them the time. It's that like, because we're now down to like two or three, you know, mega conglomerates that own all of Hollywood, it's like every VFX studio out there is like underbidding each other to be able to just keep the lights on. And you know, it's just a bad situation all around.
Taking it's full advantage of those artists.
It is also interesting, kind of the flip side, where, you know, I think of a movie like The Green Knight, one of my favorite movies of recent memory. And, you know, that's something where instead of going the normal route in the old days of like doing actual matte paintings, you know, now it's a digital matte painting. It's similar but different. You know what I mean? It still takes that time.
Yeah.
It has that artist, the artistry behind it. I couldn't get that word out. The artistry of actually painting a background, but it's still being replaced in the scene. The same way that it kind of would, you know, with a normal matte painting. So I think it's interesting, and it's also so hard to talk about because there's so many different layers of VFX and layers of things that can be changed in a film, whether it's a creature or it's a pimple on someone's face. Like, it's so so broad.
So,
you know?
It's a whole lot of cleaning up pimples.
Absolutely.
So the other thing I wanted to bring up, specifically focusing on the Jurassic Park episode, was you guys were having a bit of a discussion and debate about whether or not you felt that it was a horror movie. And I guess I wanted to elaborate on that a bit more. I personally claim it, but I understand.
I was going to ask what you thought, Sean. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the first Jurassic Park we're talking about specifically.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. The first Jurassic Park.
I mean, it's so hard, I think. I'm like admittedly a newcomer to horror. I think in the past, like maybe 5 to 10 years of my life, I've suddenly become like a horror person, I guess. It's been slowly, like, Adam, through our friendship, you probably watched me like slowly get
I feel like when we first met, you just like didn't engage in in horror stuff at all. At all, now, like, yeah. You're, like, fully...
I don't know. I got horror pilled by you, and
I did the same thing to Steve.
Now, now you're recommending, you know, books to me and shit.
I know.
It's like, dude, slow down. I can't keep up.
but so coming from kind of a newcomer perspective, it's hard for me to put horror as like a small thing because I feel like so many movies could qualify as horror. But I feel like you and I have had that argument before that like. You have a more narrow description of what horror should be, right?
I don't know. I mean, I guess like I look at Jurassic Park and the question of whether or not it's horror comes down to like, you know, would you program this in a block of horror films? And like, I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, that's
you know?
A good way
like,
to look at
I,
it.
Like if I was doing a horror movie marathon at my house, like, would I like invite people over and be like, you know, and on the menu tonight is Jurassic Park? Like, probably not, you know?
Maybe Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom.
Maybe. I mean, like, I think there's probably a little bit more of an argument for Fallen Kingdom than there is for Jurassic Park, given that so much of Jurassic Park is like built around like a sense of wonder, which isn't necessarily something that I think is like common in
that's true.
In horror. That being said, like, it does follow sort of like, you know, beat for beat, like the sort of the
creature kind of thing.
The creature feature blueprint. So like monster in that movie. Sense, like, yeah, it's clearly rooted in horror. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I would call it a horror movie.
That's I don't fair. Know that, I mean, has Spielberg really made a horror movie?
I would say Jaws is a horror film.
Yeah, Jaws is definitely a horror film.
Well, yeah,
I
was going to say, I was kind of going to use that Jaws as an example of why I felt that it was, but it I understand that it definitely lies in the middle. I think it starts off as sort of the wonders of science and the wonder, like touching into our, the most people's love for dinosaurs are just objectively cool that wonder. Yeah. Like it's, they're just cool. And it starts off feeling very Spielberg and then kind of turns into, from the wonders of science into the horrors of science. So I guess that's where, but when you said at the same time though, I still think I classify it as a horror movie. The second that you said, if we're having a horror movie night and I, you know, put that in the lineup, it would feel off.
Yeah,
probably. I wouldn't, I'm not going to be mad about it. You're never mad to watch Jurassic
Park. It depends what it's back to back with, you know, like if we're doing a double feature,
that's
if it's back to back with Jaws, then I'm like, all right, we got a classic, you know, Spielberg horror night.
That's the thing. If you're going to do, say you did a podcast where you were doing a mini series based on like, you know, ideas, like for example, horror films set in the winter. I think, putting Jurassic Park in like a series based on, you know, like creature features makes sense if you phrase it like that. Whereas when you text your co-host and say, we're going to watch The Grey during Winter Hell, it's a very confusing proposition at first.
That's fair. That's fair.
Oh, but The Grey is certainly.
I mean, The Grey rules.
Horror.
I love it.
Yeah,
like,
it's
you
Liam Neeson
have,
and the Wolves.
You've
like,
grey pilled me, but.
What's wrong with Liam Neeson's and Wolves?
It's have, so you guys, have you guys been grey pilled? That movie.
I was gray-pilled in 2013 when I watched that movie, whenever that
born
movie came
gray-pilled.
Out. I literally remember, I very rarely will just remember off the cuff where I watched a movie, but I specifically remember where I was when I watched The Grey, which is the kind of movie The Grey is. Couldn't tell you a thing about it, besides Liam Neeson and Wolves, but I remember where I was. I was
affected.
You gotta
go back.
That's
right.
So good.
You remember where you were when Michael Jackson died. You remember where you were when you watched The Grey.
Yeah, those are the two. And now The Grey.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, you know, obviously talking about these series or, as you were saying, kind of franchises that you guys talk about, how do you guys feel about when these franchises are milked, like, forever? I think Jurassic Park's a good example.
Yeah.
Like obviously there was a break in there. You know, you have Halloween Ends that's coming out quite soon. I could go on with examples, but you know, obviously there's resuscitations of franchises, there's extensions of franchises. You know, how do you guys feel about that? Just kind of from a broad spectrum.
Well, I mean, Jurassic Park is one is a great example, but the kind of flip side of that is we're just finishing off our Mission Impossible series now. So let's see. There's six Mission Impossible films currently, and
there's
going to
be
two Jurassic Park. Yeah.
Really?
yeah, there's wow. two more coming, and I assume there will be more Jurassic Park coming too, because, you know, those yeah. franchises got to keep going. And by the time I think we got to the end of the Jurassic series, it was kind of a feeling of like, well, like, I don't know that these past like 4 or 5 movies had to be made. Yeah. I mean, that's yeah. a broad, that's an exaggeration, but at the end of Mission Impossible, hey, you know, after Mission Impossible Fallout, I am all in for Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 and 2. Yeah. And it's like this feeling that, I mean, and we spoke about this about Indiana Jones as well, that we wish that there were more Indiana Jones. Like, Tom yeah. Cruise was able to just pump out Mission Impossibles every, you know, however many years. They're all quality. I love to watch them and then go on living my life. I don't need every Indiana Jones movie to, like, you know, rewrite the laws of filmmaking. Just keep making them. Keep making them good. Yes. Yeah. That's kind of how I stand on it. But what do you think, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on what the series is built around and whether or not that is sustainable. And if it isn't sustainable, how can it be like adapted into something new? So you look at something like Jurassic Park and, like, I think there are valuable things to be found in all 6 of those movies, but, like, I get to the end of, like, you know, what I'll call studying those films, and I'll say that, like, turns out that was probably a single-use concept. Like, we maybe didn't need to, like I think the phrase I used was, like, it's a, like, the first film's like a closed loop. Like, there's really yeah. nothing yeah. else to be said, and it turns out after 6 films that no one manages to say anything new, even if they find new ways of saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible or Indiana Jones is usually built around the idea that, like, there's this one guy who is the fucking best at this one yes. thing.
At everything, really, though.
Yeah, and week after week, you're going to see, even though he's the most qualified to do the insane thing put in front of him, it is still going to be the greatest challenge he'll ever face. And, like, it just, it's a very reusable premise, and, like, yeah. it can get tired and it can get boring, which is why you do things like they do in Mission Impossible, where you keep bringing in new filmmakers and you keep changing up the ways that the stories get told, and they all put their own spin on it. So, like, I look at, yeah, I think those two franchises are a good sort of good counterpoints to one another. That being said, I think it's very clear when you watch a film that is the X installment in a franchise, was this made, you know, with heart? Was this made
yeah.
by
what
people
intentions
who,
were there? Yeah,
yeah. You can tell when something is being made because it you know, someone had something they needed to say through the lens of this thing, and it's right. very clear when it's just like, well, the other one just made so right. much money. How could we not do one? And we got to get it out within 24 months of this, of the release date of this one, because, like, it just, you know, we don't want right. the public consciousness to decline between then yes. and now. Yeah. You know, like,
we have yeah. to make Snow White and the Huntsman
Winter's
Resurrection
War.
Or yeah, whatever it's called. Right. Yeah. But the flip side of that, I know we don't have much time left, but I just wanted to say that Prey is like the, you know, to me, Prey is
so
an example
good.
Of
it
like,
was so good.
Yeah, just yeah. Make Prey. Every franchise, just do Prey. Like, to me, that's like every single franchise, it should be required. Set your thing like hundreds of years in the past and just do that one-off, small stakes, you know.
Yeah.
Such a solid idea, I thought.
Yeah.
I think that it seems like the general consensus with a lot of the different things that we've talked about is it all depends on why you're making the decisions that you're making, and if it's for money, you know, and if it's just for getting something out quick and fast and at the expense of the artist making it and frankly the audience watching it, then that's a poor reason to do it. But none of these things are inherently bad, you know, whether right. it be yeah CGI remakes, milking a franchise,
yeah.
if it serves the art and it's fun and there's things that you can do, then do it.
I will, you know? I yeah, will maybe. Say, the Fast and the Furious franchise, I will go opening night, any night. It's so fun. You can make all the money that you want and make it for no reason at all. I will love that franchise.
I keep trying to pitch it to Dom. He seems wildly uninterested in them, but I think they're a good time.
I will eventually break that
Let me know if you need guests for Tokyo Drift, because I'll Tokyo Drift my way onto that pod, guys. I'm telling you, it's so good. Lil Bow Wow is in that movie.
It's a fun time.
It's amazing. Yeah, well, listen, we've really appreciated you guys being on. It's been a blast to talk about film with you. I'm sure we could talk for forever.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Absolutely. Before we let you guys go, as I mentioned before, and you may have forgotten, but we always wrap these up with what we call mostly horror recommendations. So it's normally one or two horror films and then a non-horror film that you think that our listeners should be checking out. So, Dom, I know you're now, you know, you were just talking about how much of a horror head you are. I'm curious to hear, you know, the horror film or films you guys would recommend, and then maybe, you know, a non-horror film as well.
Okay. Let's see. So I have some horror films on my mind. Adam, do you have any non-horrors?
Okay, yeah, I have a non-horror that I'll recommend. I'm going to recommend it specifically because it's in theaters right now. I'm going to recommend Emily the Criminal, starring Aubrey Plaza, which is a really great indie that I saw at, I think, either Sundance or South By last year or earlier this year, and is now in theaters, and it's sort of about the crushing perils of existing in... you know, capitalism, and how like one bad mistake can essentially just ruin your entire life, even if you have you know, tried your very best to dig yourself out from under it, and the poor decisions one might make when sort of pushed up against the wall. It's very good, and Aubrey Plaza is very good in it.
Right, like going to a very expensive art school.
You know, you say that, she is an art school student.
Oh, yeah,
shit. I gotta watch
Boom. I gotta watch it. I'll see you tomorrow.
A horror movie that Adam and I have covered, a very controversial episode of our series that I really think, I mean, controversial between me and Adam in our friendship. I would really, really recommend fans of the Thing franchise to watch The Thing from 2011. Of course, you know, I'm sure all of your listeners have watched The Thing, but the reboot or whatever resuscitation or sequel, what non-sequel, I think
it's,
that
it's a, well, I guess, yeah, it's, I guess it's technically a spoiler to say what it actually is.
Well, I guess it's, yeah. All right. We won't say, I thought it had some compelling ideas that it was exploring. And I thought that it is a piece of like the Thing franchise that fans like should watch. If you love the original Thing, you, I think, will find something to like in the prequel.
100%.
There we go. I spoiled it.
I listened to your guys' The Thing episode, and it's interesting that you bring up the prequel, because one of the things that you guys had talked about, if I remember correctly, was how like the all-male cast sort of aspect of the first one, and what... it's just interesting because the prequel brings in Mary Elizabeth Winstead, I think.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. So good.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She's killer. Also, I think it has some of the most horrifying... What do I want to call it? Absorptions.
Meat volcano.
Oh, yeah.
We had some. What were some of the words we came up with?
God, I can't.
Meat volcano was one of them.
Meat volcano.
That's the one that sticks out the most to me. Yeah, definitely watch that, guys, because this is coming from. This is a recommendation from the Webby award-winning
guy. You know? True. Yeah, get my Webby in there.
And the Meat Volcano out now at Taco Bell. Guys, thank you. Thank you both. Nice. Thank you guys again so much for being on the pod. We really appreciate it. Again, check out the Eye of the Duck podcast if you haven't already, and hopefully we'll talk to you guys soon.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you so much for having us.
We can't wait to have you guys on our show sometime soon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have you back.
And can we if it's okay with the two of you, do you mind if we announce what we're starting to cover now?
Please
do it.
Yes. This is an exclusive.
This is exclusive.
Mostly horror exclusive.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, so now that we're wrapping up Mission Impossible, and so we're moving into our next seasonal series, which will be Fall of the Dead. So we're covering all of George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead films.
Hell yeah.
Super so excited.
It's going to be a good time.
Yes.
So excited to be on your guys' show and to talk about that film. It's going to be great.
Yes.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We'll see you there. We'll I don't know if this episode, then. If this episode comes out, maybe the series is already out. But
I think this will be out before. This will be a teaser. Yeah. If you guys are listening, you know, if you listened in the past, this is in the future. Right, if you listen in the future, this is in the past. Time is a flat circle.
Right. I was just gonna say that.
Yes, absolutely. Time is a flat circle. Mostly Horror Movie Night. Eye of the Duck. Thank you guys again.
Thank you.
Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
If you like a good murder mystery story, you'll love June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game where Detective June Parker unravels the mystery of her sister's death. Travel back to the beautifully illustrated 20s, find clues, discover hidden objects, and watch the story unfold with new chapters released weekly. Put your detective skills to the test. Download June's Journey on Android or iOS. Or play online via Facebook games.
Thank you guys so much for listening to our interview with Dom and Adam from the Eye of the Duck podcast. Whoop whoop. As always, it is time for the mostly horror moment of the week. I told you guys Sean was going to have a mostly horror moment. That didn't happen. Nope. But we have one that fits for both of us.
Okay.
Here's why. So, I'm sitting at work today, and Sean, you were probably asleep.
Yep.
Yeah, it was 9:35 in the morning. Yep. So, in our group chat, our roommate group chat, Chelsea says, something is happening at our building. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, there's a fire truck and an ambulance. Caution tape on our sidewalk. Our doormat is gone. Our super is outside, and he's with the EMS and the fire people. He pointed to upstairs and then said to go back inside. So I don't know what's up.
Clove.
And so I'm at work. Yeah, I'm at work. I'm doing a lot of other stuff. Got busy work day going on. And we're like, okay, you know, if it was fire, like, we would be evacuated and all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, in my head, I'll be real with you. I'm like, I know Sean goes up to the roof all the time, right? I know that Sean's up on the roof. I don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Did they find Sean's body on the roof?
Jeez.
Did Sean fall off the roof? But it was raining, and I was like, no, Sean probably wasn't up on the roof. Come to find out, I think a few pieces of the facade on the side of our building fell on the ground.
Okay.
I don't know who called it out or whatever, but someone walking by called it out. I don't know if it fell on them or whatever. They called an inspector, building inspector. I don't know how it works here. They called someone, and they basically told our super and our building owner, like, you gotta fix your shit or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was freaky. And literally, like, walking up to the apartment today from work, like, there's caution tape all around. They're putting up a, like, scaffolding in front of our building. Like, it's so strange. Yeah. And so,
it's really interesting. All right, a couple things. A, I do go up on the roof a lot. I get drunk on the roof a lot, and I...
Yeah, dude. I was like, oh, there's caution tape? My friend's dead.
Right. I was about to say, plus, not to go full dark, but, like... I'm grieving and have depression, so I could understand people. and I climb kind of dumbly on things or have in the past. So it's funny.
I know you're explaining for our listeners. Yeah. You don't have to explain.
Well, right. When I found out that it was that pieces broke off, I was like, I wonder if... Because there's like... I don't know what to call it.
Don't implicate yourself.
No, no. But there's... Okay. There's... flourish is what we'll call it at the edge mm-hmm. of the building. And I was like, I wonder if any of that stuff fell off. And then I was thinking about, dude, what if something gave way while I was up there and just all this different stuff. But it's funny because this is like hearing your experience of hearing it roll out as Chelsea saw, you know, certain things but didn't know what was going on. That is totally a freaky moment versus me who woke up late, who didn't check the group text, who went out to go to the store and was like, why is there caution tape and like a fence, and didn't even worry about it. I was just like, huh, that's weird. It's New York. I was like, they could be filming. Yeah. So I have no idea. I didn't even, my heart didn't skip a beat today.
Yeah. That's so funny. Yeah. I got it. Like I got to work at like 9:30-ish and I saw that text and I was like, I hope I don't have to go home.
Right.
Like right after I got to work. So
it was
a mostly horror moment. Of the week. Next week, whether it's next week or tomorrow, whenever we record this, Sean will have one.
I got it. We got it.
He got it. Thank you guys as always for listening. Follow us on Instagram at Mostly Horror Pod, on Twitter at Mostly Horror. I'm on socials at Steven is Average, and Sean is everywhere at Hypocrite Inc. or Hypocrite.inc. We'll hear you guys. We'll see you guys. Hear no evil, see no evil, Sean. We'll speak you guys next time.
Goodbye.
If you like Mostly Horror, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcast.
Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.